It's Monday, 1st of December. You're listening to Resonance FM, and this is the Circle Day Show with Donnacha de Lung.
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're dumping your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators.
Welcome to the Circle Day Show. This is Donnacha de Lung back in studio again, giving you a data break. And tonight we're going to take, as we often do, a bit of a break from what everyone is talking about. So we probably all know the question of Syria and whether airstrikes are going to happen is the big story at the moment. But once again, the international media is focusing on one situation and has kind of left another story of conflict hanging. And that's the situation in Ukraine. Actually, if you search, there's a lot of things going on in Ukraine at the moment. The recent conflict has caused quite a lot of problems on the ground. And even though it does appear that Russia has its mind on other things at the moment, particularly pretending to bomb Daesh in Syria, but not really, the problems in Ukraine haven't gone away and the situation hasn't been resolved. So we're joined this week in the studio by Yelena Kensborn, who knows quite a lot about Ukraine. But first, I'd ask her to tell us a little bit about herself and what's her connection to the country.
So hello, hi, I'm Yelena Kensborn. I'm a journalist and I'm originally from Ukraine, although I grew up and spent most of my life in Sweden. I have been reporting on Ukraine quite extensively. I've been going back and forward during the Maidan protest, but also during the actual war outbreak in Donbas region. I have a lot of family in southern region of Ukraine, so I get a lot of inside stories as well as obviously the general news as everyone else hears.
Okay, so maybe let's start with right now. There are stories coming out at the moment. For example, the WHO has just put out a warning about polio breaking out. There's stories about crops failing because of conflict and nobody's been caring for them. And a big question about electricity in Crimea. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're hearing about what's going on the ground?
Well, yeah, I mean, those stories are in fact true. But in terms of the crop failing and the electricity cuts out, it is a bit of a news story, but these are also things that have been going on for a while, especially with the crops in Ukraine. Obviously, being an agriculture country, it's always been its core and element of its economy. However, the problem has always been the money, and you know, to be able to produce a crop, you've got to have someone to turn the electricity off in your village. And as many other countries who often influx, Ukraine tends to be associated with corruption. And that's, in fact, something that brought the old president down. And because you have people in the establishment basically taking out money out of the country, a lot of these villages don't get the resources they need to produce a crop. And that's something that's sadly still going on, even after the Maidan.
Okay, so you were talking there about the Euromaidan protests. One of the things is, as is the way, unfortunately, with politics these days, people saw it as very much a black and white. And there's a lot of people out there who effectively supported what Russia did because fascists were elected to the parliament. But reading about it at the time, it was a very multifaceted demonstration, at least at the beginning, when the violence drove people off the streets.
Yeah, that was in fact a really complex situation. And you have the famous scene where Yulia Tymoshenko got freed from prison and then taken onto the stage, and all the Western press basically seen as the moment of hallelujah until they realized that most of the people were shouting against her and basically verbally abused her, asking her to leave the stage immediately, which is when I think the Western media realized that it's not as black and white as they originally imagined it. I mean, of course, we can talk about Yulia Tymoshenko for hours and reasons for her being in jail, but there are, in fact, reasons for her being where she is. And because those reasons exist, the opinion in the country is also quite split. For example, as we talked about earlier, you know, you have often a really strong idea and a middle class ideal for a revolution. And you have those people coming up and leading it, and often quite educated, young, involved and good-willing people. I mean, the problem is that the people that come after them often want power for the wrong reasons. And the problem in Ukraine was, because the opinion was so split, you had all these different gangs and organizations that want to take control of the countries. No one really knew who they were and what they were standing for. So hence why, you know, we ended up with this massive state of confusion in the country.
And of course, one of the ironies there, particularly with Yura Maiden getting rid of Yanukovych, was actually that was the second time he'd been ousted by an uprising and then came back. So we had the so-called Orange Revolution only just over 10 years ago. Then he was elected back into power. And of course, you know, as you mentioned, corruption and cronyism was a big part of his rule as well.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, both sides are quite guilty in this conflict, but I would say Yanukovych, the reason why he came back is because his family is quite an established business family in the Ukraine. And in a country where you have a corrupt system, the strongest business wins. In fact, I mean, there's not a lot of evidence saying that the second time Yanukovych got elected was somehow fraudulent or false. Most people think that he got generally elected the second time, even though they have the suspicions about the first time. So that's basically how things happen in a state of corruption. Now, then you had cases where, you know, the second day when he gets elected, his son is basically driving around the country in the most expensive car, or the third most expensive car on the planet. And you're thinking, how could that happen for a country that's poor? And the way it happens is basically Yanukovych and their family would walk around various businesses and buy up them for a massively undervalued price, which is something that's collapsed since the Yanukovych family has disappeared from the country. So see, even if you take away a family, you can't really take away a system. You can't really replace it with another alternative unless you've got an established alternative. And unfortunately, that's what's happened in Ukraine.
One of the kind of interesting things for anarchists before Yura Maiden happened was the way Makhno as a figure. So Makhno, the independent anarchist leader effectively of a movement that fought both the white forces and the Ukrainian and the Red Army back in the period of the Russian Revolution, being adopted effectively as a national symbol. The stories going around that he'd been put on a coin. It's often very difficult for people who didn't live under the Soviet Union to understand how former Soviet countries deal with the idea of left and right, because obviously they're completely skewed by the idea of the Communist Party. Is there a left wing in Ukraine? Does it have a knowledge of its history? And have you been able to, have you, as a journalist who's been there, have you spoken to many of them?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because obviously there is always a left-wing movement going on, but I wouldn't say that the left-wing movement in Ukraine is equivalent to the left-wing movement here in Western Europe, just because the class system got destroyed during the communist state. And so we Ukrainians don't have those natural massive gaps in the class system. So therefore, the left-wing movement wouldn't be as strong. What you do have is the anarchist movement, which would rebel against the state and see the state as corrupt. And that movement is very strong. So maybe that's why you had all these stories and coins going out, because you know, the movement is fairly strong against that.
That was, well, it's very difficult at the moment in a situation of conflict and rising national feeling on both sides. So there's the Russian population, obviously, large parts of it have come out in favor of Russia taking over Crimea and potentially taking over parts of the east of the country. And also, you know, quite a lot of support for what is a very right-wing government with people who are openly fascist as part of it. But obviously in that context where things have become black and white, you're either on one side or the other, there's a lot of support coming from that. How difficult then is it to be somebody who opts out of that dichotomy and tries to actually build any form of alternative politics? Have you, you know, I remember reading about the Euromaidan protests where there were anarchists who had been in the middle of it trying to get involved in the riots, who literally retreated in the face of fascists on one side and the police on the other side, getting incredibly violent. And they spoke about moving back into the communities and trying to build community-based resistance. Is there any of that still remaining, or are people effectively hunkering down and hoping that there's a new opportunity for them?
For the anarchists? Well, it's hard to say whether there's any opportunity for the anarchists, just because the state is really split. And in fact, the Nationalist Party has got the most support, reason being because the Nationalist Party also got the best organization, comparison to everything else that's going on. If there were an anarchist movement, that also will have to be organized in a similar sort of manner that the nationalists managed to organize it, and, you know, have a structure that actually goes out and fundraises the same way as they do, because the nationalists would walk, you know, go around villages and towns collecting money for their campaigns. That's not anything any other party is willing to do. So unless that happens, I can't really see another alternative for Ukraine.
And the complete alternative to that is, at the moment, you know, they're talking about 50% support in, I suppose, what is still officially part of Ukraine for membership of NATO, which ironically is the one thing that Russia seemed to want to stop. But their invasion and re-seizing of Crimea seems to have pushed popular opinion in the west of the country towards a NATO at the very least.
Well, I think the strong support for NATO has always been there. 50% sounds about right, because the country is split in two. And there's a really strong argument for why Ukraine should liberate itself from Russia and start trading with Europe so that it can develop as a country. I think a lot of the support from NATO comes from the idea that if we become a part of something that's not Russia, we could actually progress and have our own economics and have our own culture. So I don't know whether it's decreased or increased. And in fact, at the moment, it's really hard to say where those statistics come from, because there's just a really flaky governmental body and there's a lot of things going on. So the polls can vary very quickly, especially in somewhere like Ukraine, when there's a media war as well as a physical war going on, and you have one report and suddenly everyone supports NATO, and then that can change. But in terms of that support, I think that's definitely been there for a while, and that's what pushed this revolution.
In terms of, as you were saying, a very strong nationalist movement there at the moment, what effect is that having on social issues? LGBT rights in Ukraine has been a somewhat contested topic over a number of years. And also, obviously, Ukraine is territorially part of Europe, and all around it, there's a refugee crisis coming from Syria. Has there been any attempt of people to go across from Turkey that way, which I was reading actually lots of Ukrainians did in the past? Is there any, or are basically all the refugees recognizing the situation is too much of a mess and they'll be going from the frying pan into the fire? But is there a kind of a social attitude towards that? Is the country becoming more xenophobic? Is there a crackdown coming from the nationalist movement against the things that basically nationalists often don't like?
Well, it's an interesting situation because on one hand, you do have a strong nationalist movement, which can be quite conservative when it comes to several topics. But at the same time, you've got Russia, which obviously has got really strong views on the LGBT community. So the nationalist community would automatically do anything they can just to contradict the Russian view, for which reason the LGBT question in particular has been quite relaxed and open. And in general, you know, there's a lot of different experience. I wouldn't want to speak for the whole community because I'm sure that there's a lot of horrific stories and attacks on gay people in Ukraine. But generally speaking, it has a reputation for having a softer attitude to the LGBT community than, for example, Russia or Turkey.
That just reminds me of a few years ago, I was at a Pride march in Riga. And you had standing side by side, you had Russian Orthodox priests and neo-Nazis with swastikas on their foreheads. And the only time they would be seen side by side and not trying to kill each other was when they were opposing Pride. Obviously, it sounds like that. It's one part of Eastern Europe where actually that has successfully divided those two negative communities rather than unite them, as has happened in too many countries.
Right, that's right. Because you do have the Russian Orthodox Church, you see, then the whole church situation is also really complicated because there's various religious group in Ukraine. But the Russian Orthodox Church is obviously the main power behind the whole anti-gay propaganda in Russia. And the Russian Orthodox Church also exists in Ukraine. So you're either with them or against them, as they say. And I think for many people, your views on all these other questions, which are kind of secondary at the moment, when the country is in state of war, would automatically rely on whoever they support.
Okay, moving on to something that I know you've been looking at recently, because I asked you to look into it, is the situation of journalists in Ukraine, because it's been a particularly difficult time for journalists trying to report from one side or the other.
Yeah, well, the journalist situation in Ukraine is obviously used to be quite relaxed. The press used to be quite free. But now when you have a lot of pressures from all the sides and you have a situation where a lot of journalists have actually been hunted down during the Maidan protest and kept on being hunt down after, you've got a situation where not a lot of people dare to express their opinions just because they don't know who's reading them. And unfortunately, because the rise of the extreme from both sides, the freedom for journalists has really suffered in a way. But there's also a lot of room for improvement, especially you've got really good independent papers in Ukraine, a lot of English-speaking English papers in Ukraine who produce really good journalism. So they've been there for a while, and despite all the different situations the country's been through, produced really good reports.
What's it like being for you going there from here? So as you said, you've been back and forth and reporting around the protests. Mm. What's it been like as a journalist with roots of a degree in Ukraine? What's it been like going back and kind of have you been able to do the work that you've wanted to do, or has, because you've been there in a number of fairly difficult situations?
Mm. Well, see, whether or not you'll be able to do the work depends on who you're with at that time. And I think that generally is a general feeling across the board, especially reporting from ATO areas, so the terrorist hold areas, as they say. You have various quite dangerous groups. Whether or not you're able to report on what you want to show depends on what they let you film. So that's always sort of been there, and that's something that goes with any war reporting, when you depend on whoever you're embedded with, because at the moment it's really dangerous for journalists to independently travel to ATO areas. In terms of reporting from anything else in Ukraine and writing articles, that's not really a problem for concerning the general issues and the bigger picture of the country. I don't think that the general feeling is that you're not allowed to report on polio cases, or you're not allowed to report on some weird coins, but it's just that the situation is so difficult and there's many different players, and to make a good report you have to sometimes be embedded with these players, and unless they allow you to report or see a certain situation, you know, rather than like walking around and showing us, this is our nurseries, this is where we feed our children, or look, we're giving like so many free Christmas gifts to these kids, you know, film this, don't film that on the left-hand corner. That's obviously something that you can add afterwards, but there's a lot of things that you would want to include, and unfortunately don't have the chance to.
Okay, so let's finish up talking about Ukraine. This is a question we ask many of our guests. What would you like to see? What do you think could and should happen in Ukraine that would potentially improve the lives of people there? What kind of settlement do you think needs to be reached? Because as I was saying in the beginning, it's still an unresolved situation. There are still autonomous regions that are existing in a kind of limbo, neither Ukrainian nor Russian. What would you what do you think should happen, and what would you like to see happen?
Well, I'm pretty positive about what's going to happen. I think Ukraine is going to flourish in the next 10 years. And I think the reason for why it would do that is because it's going to fix its economy. And I think that's why it has to maintain its focus. Whether you speak Russian or Ukrainian, or you know, think and have really strong views a particular topic, doesn't really matter. I mean, the main problem Ukraine has is an economic problem. And at the moment, because it's open up and you have a lot of Ukrainians traveling across the world, working really cool projects, bringing it back and strengthening the country's economy, I think the future is really bright.
Okay, so just to finish up, just want to ask you a question, because you know, this is Resonance Independent Media. You yourself have your own independent media setup. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Startup Media before we finish?
I've got a new media company. We do various types of journalism. Basically, I'm trying to push the boundaries of journalism and push the boundaries of technology to show something that's previously been impossible.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Yodette will be back next week. And just to play you out a bit of Ukrainian-linked music, this is Gogol Bordello with Not a Crime.
Я письмо достал, Николай Иванович. Чи опять запрещенное?
Совершенно запрещенное. Белинского Гоголю.
Ах, Николай Иванович, какое письмо?
Drop the charges! Запрещенная, давай!
Fire in the power, you know?
Yeah. time. In the old times, it was not a crime.
What are you talking
about? In the old time, in the old time. In the old times, it was not a, not a crime.
Naturalization. What are you talking about? It's all about time. Press rewind, you know, today, today.
Perfectly natural.